Everyone knows the glorious story of the child born in a faraway manger. Well, this isn't that story. This is Monty Python's all-new Life of Brian.
They call Brian.
He was born into the golden age of Roman rule.
Do we have any crucifixions today?
139, sir. Special celebration.
It was a time of miracles.
I was blind, and now I can see.
Friendly persuasion. And gracious invaders. But there was just one thing on everyone's mind.
Sex, 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 that's all they think about her.
Oh dear.
In those days, getting stoned wasn't against the law. It was the law. And things looked bad. For the people of Jerusalem.
Still a few crosses left.
Until Brian dropped in. He was a born leader.
Brothers, brothers, we should be struggling together.
We are.
A potential martyr.
What would they do to me? Oh, you'll probably get away with crucifixion.
Crucifixion?
Yeah, first offense.
And his mother's joy.
You mean telling them?
They think I'm the Messiah, Mum.
The Messiah!
There's no Messiah in here. There's a mess, all right, but no Messiah.
And now, it's up to Brian to deliver a despairing nation from the throes of oppression. Tough luck, Jerusalem. This is the life of Brian.
And now for something completely different. As the boys from Monty Python's Flying Circus used to say, welcome to this edition of Cross Defense. I'm your host, Pastor Rod Zwanisser, welcoming you to this unique program where we talk about apologetics. It comes from a biblical word, a Greek word that the Apostle Peter uses, apologia, which means to make a defense. And so that's where we get the show's title, Cross Defense. Broadcasting live today to you from the studios of worldwidekfuo.org, celebrating our 90th year of broadcasting. That is formally on December the 14th, but we started early because we're doing 90 days of thanks to God for this gospel proclamation that started on December the 14th, 1924. We kicked it off last week with, among other things, the important thing was we unveiled a Lego display of the history, the good history of gospel proclamation here of Worldwide KFUO. And the person who did this great Lego display, you can go on our website, kfuo.org, and you'll see pictures there. They're also on Facebook and scattered throughout the world on everybody's sites now, by Pastor Sam Schulteis of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Huntington Beach, California. Hi, Sam. And again, everybody's talking about the Lego. We now have it under plexiglass. It looks even better under there. And everybody's marveling at it. They're picking up your write-ups on what all the things that we put in there mean. So welcome to the show today.
Well, thanks, Rod. Pleasure to be back, and it was a joy to put one of my childhood hobbies that, well, I never left it behind in childhood. I've kept it up. Good to put that to use for the good folks there at KFUO.
And this week, Sam, as you know, our emphasis on our anniversary T-shirt, which some are coming your way, some for you and your family. And the highlight, which everybody's liking, is we have I Lutheran on the back. We have Luther with an iPod. He's got the plugs in his ears, and he's listening to KFUO on his smartphone, and he's holding a copy of the Book of Concord.
So, I saw a couple of people on Facebook, pictures of probably people running around the IC, like the Reverend Will Wheaton was wearing one last week on Facebook.
Yeah.
I saw. That's good. I saw the Statue of Walter even got one.
I'm looking out. He's still got it over his arm. So
outstanding.
And so, you know, you can go on there and find out how you all of you that are interested can get these and support this Lutheran outreach of the gospel throughout the world. Today, we want to do the apologetics of John Calise and the Life of Brian movie. Or you could say it this way, more to where we want to go with this, the apologetics of false Jesuses. Because Calise and some others, in our opinion, I think in most Christians' really opinion, it's not a true Jesus that he depicts. Not just in the film, that isn't primary. What's primary is what Calise said during interviews after the movie and even to this day, discrediting what Pastor Schultheis and I would say would be the Jesus of the Bible. Now, there were some interviews after this movie came out in, I think it was August in the United States, Sam, and then November in across the pond, BBC over in Great Britain.
Okay.
And then subsequently on the BBC, they interviewed Calise and the primary writer of the Life of Brian movie, Graham Chapman, about this. And what we're going to talk about, Sam, and I know you run into this as all of us, Christians do, especially with younger people, is a growing, would you say, illiteracy about what the Bible really teaches?
I think you do find that around, just in general in society. I mean, it used to be the case that you could talk about basic Old and New Testament stories. I mean, things as simple as Noah's Ark or, you know, Moses and the Ten Commandments and Abraham and Sarah and, you know, things like that that are fairly standard Sunday school stories, or things in the New Testament, Jesus walking on water and miracles like catching lots of fish and so forth. That used to be, even if people didn't believe it was true or even read their Bible from time to time, they at least had a familiarity with that, with some of the main kind of the highlight teachings that often come up. But you find more and more that even that basic familiarity with it is either confused to the point of where you can't recognize it, or it's unknown altogether, and it gives people have a blank slate. The problem with that is then many will attempt to fill it, and that can work in our advantage as Christians and apologists and declaring and defending the faith, but it can also provide some challenges for us too.
Absolutely. So many today, too, that hold seats and positions of authority in teaching our young people and then being interviewed on media about the Bible and Christianity, they call them experts, scholars, academics. They do not hold to, you know, what we would say would be the historic biblical-based faith. And, you know, their methodology of really reading the Bible and then sharing it and teaching it is called the historical critical method, and it does just what its name says. It criticizes the history that's been given down through the ages of what Christianity and the Bible are all about. And I think when we go on and hear some of the interview with John Calise and Graham Chapman, we're gonna maybe sense that they were around pastors and Bible scholars, we'll put that in quotes, Bible scholars, that was of this critical nature. And you know, I feel kind of unfortunate for some of those, do you not, Sam, where they maybe have been given not the real truth, or I would even say go as far as to be fair and say they were not given both sides of the story.
Yeah, you find that in a lot of these cases where, and you'll see this, or if we listen to some of the clips, or if people go and listen to the interview with John Calise and on this particular BBC program that we're referring to, and you listen to some of the things that he says and the characteristics and the caricatures of which both Chapman and Calise make about Christianity, you can tell that they got their Christianity from some less than orthodox sources. It's kind of like when you get guys like another contemporary to our time today. What's his name now? A biblical scholar out at North Carolina.
Bart Ehrman.
Bart Ehrman, thank you. I was having a little bit of a brain slip this afternoon. And anyway, Bart Ehrman comes up with all these sorts of things that you realize, well, that's the Christianity you were either raised on or led to believe or taught earlier in life has unfortunately and to a great great tragedy done you a disservice. And I think we see that in the case of John Cleese in particular mentions that a couple of times. I think we see that in the interview.
For sure.
That rather.
And so let's hear a little bit of this, and then we've got some more, and we'll begin talking it. So take a listen to this. It's a BBC, just a little clip from a BBC interview with John Cleese.
And I can best answer that, I think, by answering Mahmoud's question, which is that what were we trying to do? And I think it comes out, it was spelled out perhaps rather too plainly, rather too banally at one point, when he says, make up your own mind, don't let other people tell you. And we would absolutely deny, at least I would, that there was any attempt to say you should not believe in Christ. What we're saying is take a critical view, find out about it, don't just believe because somebody tells you to. Somebody in the pulpit says something, question it, work it out yourself.
You're seriously suggesting that if someone saw that film, say a young kid who knew nothing about the Gospels or about history, that the figure of Christ that would emerge from it, this story of the Incarnation, would be a noble one, would be...
He would have to sort it out for himself.
And you
and he would have to, for example, work out, I mean, does one accept every word in the Bible? In the Sermon on the Mount, did they get it all right when Mark wrote it down 30 years later? Well, I mean, was everything all right?
But is the film likely to be seen by anybody who doesn't know an awful lot about Jesus Christ?
Most certainly it is today. If you have it for children of 14 today, you will find that the many, many children of 14 today, thanks to the secular nature of the education they're receiving, know nothing about it at all. And they would see this figure in the light in which he appears in this film, you see. It's no good you cheating yourselves. Yeah. You can't have it both ways. You produce this particular... film, which arouses bursts of laughter, as I said earlier, rather easily procured. But don't imagine that someone seeing that is going to go away with the concept of the founder of the Christian religion and all that that meant to mankind in any way corresponding to what history or the Gospels or anything else has presented.
So that was a segment of an interview here on Cross Defense. I'm your host, Rod Zwanitzer, from an interview on BBC between John Cleese, Graham Chapman of Monty Python's Flying Circus. And they were the writers, the creators of the Life of Brian movie. We're using this as we began, if you tuned in late, to talk about false Jesuses that people have and they say is accurate, fair. And we heard Cleese mentioning this. And then there was a British pastor there that you heard talking, and as well as a moderator. And you can go on YouTube and just look up, I think it's John Cleese Discredits Christianity, and you'll get like about four sections. And if you're like me, I listened to him and was pretty fascinated by it. We're talking with Pastor Sam Schulteis from Huntington Beach, California, about this. And, you know, Pastor, isn't it hard for you and myself and others when we're up against somebody that's so well known for something else than being a good theologian? John Cleese is a fantastic comedian. He makes me laugh. I've always liked him. I liked Fawlty Towers. I liked, a lot of the Flying Circus. And so it's hard when a comedian gets up and talks like he really knows the Bible, he knows correct theology. It's a tough road to compete with somebody like this.
Well, for sure, because, you know, they have the advantage of having a wide audience. They have recognition. They have all these different, stones on their side of the weight, or fighters in their corner, and it makes it very easy. They have easy access to a microphone, and so unfortunately, it seems like the people, the more often you have access to a big public sphere like that, the more apt you are to kind of say something silly. Because it seems like whenever you see this at award shows, this happens all the time, or whenever they get some actor or actress on some kind of news program in the evenings or what have you. They tend to say something that makes them sound rather uneducated, but for some reason or another, nobody calls them on it, and they get away with it, and that's the unfortunate part about it.
So, you know, when they are paid to typically do endorsements of products or services, you know, I like this type of English muffin, or I like this type of coffee, or I drink this kind of beverage. A lot of people are influenced by that. And so I think these people have learned, too, that they can influence the public out there when they almost say anything. And in this case, where a non-believer is critical of historic Christianity, and we're going to even get him into it more here in the next segment, where he puts himself up as knowing the truth about Jesus and about Christianity, and we'll test that. Well, he says here, he talks here about the film's goal was to do nothing more than to help people make up their own mind, to present a critical view, and for so people won't just believe these things because it's said so they can sort it out. How do you respond to that, Sam?
Yeah, that's an interesting statement that he made, and he made it, you know, multiple times in his interview. And I do think there's some of the bishop and then Malcolm Muggeridge, both gentlemen on there that were responding to Chapman and Cleese, they tried a couple of times, and I think that they unsuccessfully did a couple of things that didn't work out so well in their favor. One of which was to continue, and they repeatedly used a couple of different ad hominem sorts of attacks, like, oh, it wasn't very funny, or, you know, laughs are cheaply, easily made. And
now, what do you mean by ad hominem attack?
Yeah, sort of more of attacks of a personal, you know, it's against the person it's a Latin phrase, kind of a logical fallacy of a way to argue that doesn't really argue about the main substance of the argument. It tends to focus on the person. So, oh, I don't like you. You have you have a bad hair day today. So, you know, your argument is invalid. That kind of thing. It's really not a very good way of arguing. But sometimes it can get a quick laugh, like it did from, you know, it's a quick, easy pot shot. And so, I think the guys that are on our side of the aisle, so to speak, in that interview actually kind of dropped the ball a couple of times in that regard, in focusing on that rather than the substance of the issue. But that as it was, they did make a lot of good points along with it. The unfortunate thing is that John Cleese and they don't really always go after the substance of the discussion either. And it's interesting that he says repeatedly, well, we want to make this movie, right, we want to make this movie about, we want to do it unbiased, we want to do it without any kind of clouding the mind. And I do think you can make a good point by making fun of something. I think satire has an important place in our society, and you can actually learn from things that are both entertaining and funny at the same time. So that's not a really good argument that the bishop and Malcolm Muggeridge make, but they don't call him out on this issue that he brings up about letting people decide for themselves what the facts are when they themselves don't provide any. John Cleese and Chapman don't really get into any substantive arguments for or against the Christian faith. They get into a few against it, but nothing really is drawn out or developed. And, you know, who's to say, well, why should we take their version of history? If they're calling us to be questioning history or questioning facts and that kind of thing, why should we believe them over anybody else either? You know, the standard has to be applied both ways.
That's a very good point that you're making, that Cleese and his responders from the church side, they get into more about, is this film, you know, what is this, is its purpose? And they get very little substance about, does it present an accurate and fair, you know, opinion about Christianity? And Cleese just made a statement that I think is one of the most factual that he makes a lot, and was the Gospel of Mark. It was written 30 years later. And then he really doesn't even say then what. Mm-hmm, and you and I think, could resolve that issue for Mr. Cleese, or at least, to be honest, we could present another side that people could go and check out. And we could ask Mr. Cleese, what are his reasons for believing that is a problem, that the Gospel of Mark was written 30 years after Jesus was resurrected?
Yeah, and he makes a couple other claims later on, too, similar things to that that kind of question or that assertion that he poses, is that, you know, he makes a claim that nobody knows who wrote the Gospels, and we don't know, you know, what time or what language they were written in and that kind of thing. But we actually do know those things, and there are some good sources both in looking at biblical historical exegesis, but also looking at just looking at the way that the text has been handed down to us. You know, sort of being a good textual critic, not going crazy like the higher critics with it have done, but to look at it as we've handed it down and received it. Well, then there's some answers there.
Absolutely, and we have some archives of shows, Sam, as you're probably aware, that from some of your colleagues and other apologists, that we have, you know, delved into that question, the reliability of the Gospel of Mark and the other New Testament documents.
Yeah.
And according to how all ancient historic documents are viewed as to their worthiness to be read and treated as accurate, the ones of the New Testament are very different in a good way. They pass the test of reliability of ancient documents better than what we would think other documents. For instance, the annals of Caesar in the wars; those are accepted by historians and academia as being solid, trustworthy ancient documents. You know, some of the Napoleon in the Greek period, you know, we have a lot of ancient classics that all the world recognizes as being acceptable and reliable. And if you use their standards, the New Testament is more than able to meet those and even exceed those.
Yeah, I think that's one of the important things you mentioned there, too. Not only can we ascertain that these are reliable and trustworthy documents, you know, the New Testament and Christianity has this wonderful quality about itself that it's verifiable, which means it's also, in principle, falsifiable. And I think that's something that can appeal to folks like John Cleese and Chapman. These are very intelligent people, and we shouldn't dismiss that. We should, I think, actually use that to our advantage and give them good intellectual answers to the faith that, you know, they're asking different questions. And I think part of the difficulty is they've received some very bad answers to their questions in the past, and perhaps that's colored or maybe even, to use a bit more of a pejorative word, jaded their opinion of Christianity in different things we see in their satire. I think using history is a great way to approach it, because you see in their movies and the flying circus films, you know, things like the Holy Grail, they have a love for history. These, the creators of Monty Python and the purveyors of it, and to show them, you know, just ask them some good historical questions. And so, if you find people that are similarly historically minded or intellectually minded, throw back a good intellectual question at them, and I think that will give you some room for dialogue, and as well as give you a good platform for making a case for Christianity, not just telling them where they're wrong.
Yeah,
you gotta do both. You have to tear down false worldviews, and you have to prop up and give a good apologetic, a good defense.
Sure. And just for a listener out there that might be interested in what we're talking about, the reliability of the New Testament documents, just go to our website, kfuo.org. We have a great search engine there. Just put in the reliability of the New Testament or the Bible, and you will see a bunch of programs, and not just in this cross defense, but several there where we've taken the entire show and talked about this. I'm not remembering, Sam, if in the next segment we get from this interview on BBC, that they talk about, I think Cleese asked the two churchmen, is there any way that we could, you know, falsify, you know, your view of Christianity where you say, okay, it's not historical, I'm not going to believe anymore. And they don't really answer that correctly.
No,
and
they didn't answer. You know, I was bummed.
I was too.
Bummed by that. I was hoping they would have a good answer, because
yeah.
I've read some things by both of these gentlemen that they had written. And, yeah, I mean, especially Malcolm Muggeridge has a very good reputation of being a...
More on the other side of this with Sam Schulteis and John Cleese of Life of Brian, Monty Python fame. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
This is a newly born radio station, KFUO. Those were the first words spoken on KFUO. But before those words could even be broadcast, it took a group of volunteers and supporters to cover the cost of constructing our very first radio facility.
On this occasion, we also wish to express our hearty thanks to all Christians who have given or pledged their contributions toward the erection and upkeep of this station.
Since those historic words, KFUO has relied on supporters to bring us through our first 90 years. And KFUO continues to need your support to move forward into our next. Will you prayerfully consider supporting the worldwide outreach of KFUO with a gift today? For a suggested gift of $90 or more, we'll say thank you with a collector's edition 90th anniversary I Lutheran t-shirt. To give your gift, contact Joni or Mary at 314-996-1512. Thank you for your continued support and prayers for worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Hi, trial lawyer and apologist Craig Parton inviting you to listen to Cross Defense the first Monday of every month to what we're calling Apologetics Boot Camp 101. You'll hear me pose hard-hitting questions to the foremost living defender of the Christian faith, John Warwick Montgomery, on such issues as God's existence, the problem of evil, and more. You'll also be able to participate with your questions and comments. Join us on Cross Defense the first Monday of every month, Apologetics Boot Camp 101.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on behalf of Concordia Plan Services, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, the LCMS Foundation, Lutheran Housing Support Corporation, Concordia University System, and Corporate Synod, daily reaches out to our members and partners, working together to support our local, global, and international ministries, church workers, and LCMS initiatives at large to carry the mission forward and to serve each other in love. Opportunities to serve, lcms.org/jobsboard.
It just might be that you know someone who is aging gracefully but needs a bit of assistance. Perhaps you are looking for a doctor to make a house visit on your mom, or a handyman to fix an elderly neighbor's sink. Or maybe you think your dad qualifies for veterans benefits, but you just aren't sure. Aging Answers is a free service sponsored by Lutheran Senior Services. Make it your go-to source for aging-related concerns. LSS Aging Answers, 314-446-2475.
KFUO celebrates our 90th anniversary. On December 14, 1924, from a small attic studio in St. Louis, KFUO was heard for the very first time. Our founders used the motto, keeping forward, upward, and onward, to go along with the call letters assigned to the station. And from that day on, KFUO has moved forward through each decade, proclaiming a Christ-centered message. We've moved upward with broadcasting in AM, FM, HD, and satellite syndication of KFUO programs. Worldwide KFUO continues to move onward, using today's technologies including internet streaming, on-demand programs, and podcasting. The mission of that first day is the mission we have today. Go out and proclaim the gospel. Now, through the end of January, join us for fun and memories during this 90-day celebration with a new theme each week, reflecting on our 90 years of ministry. KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Are you planning a short-term mission trip to share the faith with people who speak another language? Take along the books of the Lutheran faith, translated into the languages of the people you'll serve. The Lutheran Heritage Foundation has translated and published books like Luther's Small Catechism and A Child's Garden of Bible Stories into 85 different languages, like Chinese, Arabic, Spanish, and Swahili. Learn more about these free resources. LHFmissions.org.
Back with you here on WorldwideKFUO.org, celebrating 90 years of gospel proclamation. Not just proud of that, but so thankful that we're able to continue to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ on these airwaves here in the St. Louis listening area, AM 850, and worldwide at KFUO.org. With us today, Pastor Sam Schulteis. He's a pastor out in Huntington Beach, California. He did the Lego display for the beginning of our 90th anniversary, and we're talking with him today about people, sometimes famous people, that portray Jesus in a really false and deceptive way. John Cleese of Monty Python fame, did that in the life of Brian, and we're kind of going there as the kickoff to this. We hope it to be a series, because there's so much today that we want to point out to you is out among us, and how that we might speak against that or speak to that, have a conversation, a discussion with people that hold these views. Sam, when we had to rudely stop and go off to a break, we were talking about a challenge that John Cleese made to the churchmen there in the BBC interview. Is there anything that would falsify your faith? And you and I were saying, gosh, wish that they would have did that. It was also in the Ken Ham and Bill Nye, the science guy debate. Yes. Bill Nye asked, you know, Ken Ham, is there anything that would falsify it? And I was screaming at the TV going, yes, yes.
Precisely. It's always interesting when that question comes up. I have a good friend, and he may, I can't remember if he's been on your show before. Anyway, he's done a lot of this kind of hands-on apologetic work on campuses, Pastor Mark Jasa.
Yeah, we had Mark on once.
Super. And he always tells the story of some Christian, he was talking with a Christian and an atheist, and he asked, in the course of the conversation, he asked the atheist, you know, is there anything that would cause you to overthrow, you know, your faith in what you believe in? And then the Christian and the atheist took turns responding and so forth, and the atheist asked him that. And so Mark spinned it around and asked it this way. He took 1 Corinthians 15, and he said, well, if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, you know, and he was asking this to the Christian, what would that mean? And the Christian wouldn't answer the question. The Christian would say, well, of course he rose from the dead. I know it's true. It has to be true. But he didn't answer the question. The question, of course, well, if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, then that would mean, like St. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15, that would mean that everything we've done is meaningless and futile, and our faith is in vain, and we're still in our sins, and we are without hope, and we should be miserable, and we might as well eat, drink, and be merry, because tomorrow we die. But then he turned the question on the atheist and said, if Jesus did rise from the dead, if he did, right, he flipped the question around, if Jesus really did rise from the dead, well then, what would that mean? And there the atheist wouldn't answer the question either, because, of course, that would have disrupted the worldview at that point. So he had them both trapped. So it's interesting how many Christians fall into this trap, too, of thinking that the Christian faith is not, in principle, falsifiable, which is a dangerous thing, because then it's not something that hinges on real objective truth or falsity or objective inquiry. It's something that's within the mind, or what some of the old neo-Orthodox would call meta-history, which was really not history at all. So you have to answer the question like St. Paul does. And St. Paul says, if the body is produced, right, if Christ is not raised, then we are, of all people, most to be pitied. But, in fact, he goes on to say, Christ has risen from the dead. And here are 500 people you can go talk to. Some are dead, but most are alive. And then he names several of the apostles, Peter in particular, James, and a few others, who had seen him in person after the resurrection, and go and talk to them. These are eyewitnesses. You can be certain that these things, as he says later in the book of Acts, did not happen in a corner.
I like that, the way that Mark and you turned that around to not just be the falsifiable thing that the Christian would then have to give up his faith, but if you can historically accurately show that Jesus was resurrected as the historical data shows, then will you give up your non-belief and consider seriously Christianity?
Right.
That's good.
Yeah, it's interesting. John Cleese talks about, you know, one of the things they wanted to do with this movie was to, of course, be funny and have a good laugh at things, which I think in a lot of cases we would have to admit, even as Christians, yeah, they did achieve that. But he also wanted to fight or combat these closed systems of thought. Right? They didn't want people to not think for themselves. But isn't that true of atheists, too? Do they not have a closed system of thought? And are they open to looking at these claims of Christianity intellectually and honestly and objectively? And, I mean, the more you talk to them, sometimes that can be difficult.
And so many of our people in our culture do not realize that a lot of our Education for young people and higher education is a closed system. I believe a guy, Alan Bloom, some time ago wrote a great book, Closing of the American Mind. But let's go ahead. Let's go ahead and hear this next segment because it'll give us a lot more things to talk about. This is a part of just an extract of an interview on BBC with John Cleese about the life of Brian and, more importantly, his view of Jesus.
I think I could say with utter sincerity that there was nothing in this particular film that would lead me to want to change conclusions that I've reached after living for 76 years in this world.
Is there anything? That's the point I'm making.
Well, in this film, there was nothing that could possibly, because the film itself bore so little.
No, but the point I was making, Mark, was not the film. Forget the film. We'll say that's rubbish. Okay. Is there anything that can happen to you now that could cause you to change your mind?
But of course, every single person who is alive and spiritually alive is constantly reviewing his faith. I do not believe for a moment that there is a definitive faith, and you say, there it is. But there's nothing in this little squalid number that could possibly affect anybody. In that sense, I give you this point. I give you this point that there's nothing in this film that could possibly destroy anybody's genuine faith. That I grant you, absolutely not, because it's much too tenth-rate for that. But but what I still contend is that someone who is young, 14 years old, seeing that without any particular background, might really imagine that that buffoonery is an expression of this great episode.
Well, which, you see, I was also, you talked about the presentation of Christianity. I mean, I went to an English preparatory school and an English public school, Clifton College, or the Sports Academy.
I sympathise with you.
I was given 8 or 10 years of a form of Christianity which I grew to despise and dislike. Largely, it insulted my intelligence. The sermons that were given at the age of 11 and 12, I felt, insulted my intelligence. When I got into writing this film, and we all had exactly the same reaction, we started to discover a lot of stuff about Christianity, and I started to get angry. Because I started to think, why was I given this rubbish, this tenth-rate series of platitudes, when there were interesting things to have discussed? There were factual
and
things. Nobody ever told me that they don't know what language the Gospels were written in, that they don't even know who wrote them, and they're not even sure what cities they were written in.
Well, then you must have read very superficially at your school.
Look, John, it's very bad luck for you, but you see, I used to go to Clifton College to preach very often when you were there.
I know the headmaster, I know the staff, I know the students. All I can say is you must have been as idle a boy, as splendid an actor as you are.
If you really take this seriously,
I mean, you had some absolute first-class teachers.
They were a joke. They were a joke.
Well, and of course, you made them. I know people from Clifton College of exactly your own period.
I remember
who are now
the
priests
sermons.
In my diocese.
I remember the sermons. I remember.
You don't remember mine. Tell me what I preached on.
No idea. I only remember the bad ones.
So you heard a little back and forth there between a couple of Christians from Great Britain and John Cleese. And he's talking the is it Malcolm Muggeridge? Is that the first voice we heard there talking about criticizing the Life of Brian film, Sam?
I believe so. And then I forget the bishop's name, but later he jumps in with the you were at my
Clifton College stuff.
Yeah, exactly. With
but,
college,
you know, the point was that Malcolm Muggeridge is making that a 14-year-old then, and this is like probably 1979 when this interview was done, I think would be pretty comparable, if not worse, to a 14-year-old today that saw this movie and was told, this is going to help you sort out the factualness, the reliability of Christianity. This film really doesn't help. I mean, do that, as you were pointing out earlier in our talk today, Sam. And then
you know, Khalees responds, well, you know, in prep school, looking back on it now, when we were putting together the film, we found out that this is rubbish. That was the word he used. Mm-hmm. 10 years of my intelligence being insulted. And it'd be fascinating to find out exactly what were some of the things that he found as rubbish and insulting to his intelligence. But he did tell us a couple that you'd mentioned earlier, and let's just talk about them one at a time. Because I think this is what happens. People throw this out, and then we don't take the opportunity to seize it and say, okay, you said we don't even know what language the Gospels were written in. Let's right. answer
yeah,
that.
He makes that. He drops a couple of rather big assertions.
He sure does.
On the show there, and I'm still surprised. Hearing it again on the program reminded me of just what a big shocker it is that nobody calls him on it. I mean, you have two pretty well educated Christians sitting there that I think should have done that.
That's the first thing they should have did. It went right there and say, okay, let's take these and then the rest of the rubbish. Why don't you tell us those too? You and I would have loved to get that list.
Yeah, it would have been. I mean, you have John Cleese essentially falling right into your hands. I mean, he wants to talk about history, but the irony is here that Malcolm Muggeridge didn't really want to. He just wanted to, he wanted to, at least there. The second point he made about the caricature of Christ in the movie was a good point, but he started off by calling it a tenth-rate film, which is not really exactly a nice way to begin a conversation with somebody.
No. And you and I could, I think, did a better job by saying, this is great entertainment. As you said previously, and I've looked at it, it makes me laugh. Is it deprecating to my faith? Yes, but that's okay if it gives me an opportunity to share, as you and I are doing. What is the real Jesus? What was the real crucifixion all about? What is the Bible all about? We welcome those opportunities.
Yeah, I think it was earlier in the interview segments. I forget where exactly, but I believe it was the bishop had mentioned that a movie like this would not have been possible had there not been a real historical Christ and Jesus. And I think that was actually an important point that I wish he would have expounded on a little bit more, because this is one of the, I suppose it's kind of the paradox of Christianity. We are, even though the Beatles want to claim that they're more famous than Jesus, the more copies of the Bible have been sold. So that's in one category on our favor. But the other thing is that, what the point there is that they're appealing to something that is really happening, even though they make a satire and they're poking fun at the Christian faith. For one thing, they know that the Christians are going to take it. They're not going to, most of them aren't going to riot. They may come on a show and like on the BBC here and have some banter back and forth, but nothing really badly adverse is going to happen to them.
Let's have you just answer those questions, because I think, these are softballs that I can toss up to you, Sam.
Sure.
Do we know what language the four Gospels were written in?
Yeah, it's Greek. That's really easy. And even people that don't like the New Testament or don't believe it's true, and we would have to include in that category some of the historical critics that we mentioned earlier, they all operate with the Greek, and they operate with Greek manuscripts, and those are the tools that we have to use.
Yeah, to you and I that had to study that Greek and still read in it and develop our sermons around that from that original language and all the richness of that, it's kind of laughable. To us, to hear it again, as you say,
yeah,
I do too.
It makes you wonder what kind of education he was receiving. Yeah. That was an interesting question that, again, didn't really get answered either, but what kind of education were they receiving? What were the books? What were the discussion? What were the lecture series? What was that rubbish, like you asked, that John Cleese found so insulting to his intellect? And it may very well be that it was, because there still is a great strain of Christianity that wants to be anti-intellectual or hang the intellect on something like, well, just search inside and find yourself, the Star Wars, search your feelings, you know it to be true, and that's not very helpful either.
Sure. And the kind of, if they were around a school that would have such a harsh historical critical faculty of supposed Christians, then, they might have wondered where the Gospels were written, if they were ever written. And then the other question that I'd like to toss to you is, Cleese charged that we don't even know who wrote the Gospels. How do you respond to that, Sam?
I think the best way to do it is to look at who the authors' names have been handed down from history. And we have we have good ample evidence from, I mean, you can look inside the text and there's some clues there that either explicitly name names, and then you have this overwhelming wealth of church historians, disciples, and other, you know, other different historical resources that help corroborate who these writers are. And, I mean, they basically go by the names Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and two of them were very close associates of eyewitnesses, Luke and Mark. They were not eyewitnesses of every single event, but they were involved in some of the later parts of the Christian growth and mission, especially Luke, if you think of his part two, which is the book of Acts. And then you have two eyewitnesses, Matthew and John, that saw these things directly. And in the case of the close associates of the eyewitnesses with Mark and Luke, they repeatedly mention that they, well, especially Luke, mentions that he goes and does his homework. Inasmuch as many others have undertaken to tell, make an account of these events, oh, to you, excellent Theophilus, I present my findings, essentially, is what he's saying in the first few verses there. And Mark was a close associate of Peter, who was an eyewitness of many of these things. So we have a pretty good idea of who the authors were and what the language was that was written in, and a good idea of how those were handed down to us faithfully, too, which is, we mentioned that earlier with the whole the manuscript evidence and the textual evidence and all that.
Absolutely. I want to throw this out because I want to expand on this into future shows that deal with these false Jesuses that we have among us today. We're going to start with John Cleese in 2011 launched another attack on Christianity. And this specific attack that he made, a couple of the points he makes are made pretty frequently today. And a book that I really enjoyed reading from Dan Kimball called They Like Jesus, But Not the Church, Insights from Emerging Generations. You find the same thing that John Cleese is against. And in a 2011 interview, he launched a stinging attack on the teachings of the Catholic Church and what he describes as fundamentalist Christian churches. He blasted the teachings on abortion and homosexuality and claimed that they would not be recognized by Christ. Now, that's what the emerging generation people, and I did this myself, Sam. Mm-hmm. Dan Kimball said that he went to the coffee shops, and he would go there regularly with his laptop, and he would work on his sermons, Bible studies, and so forth. So he got to know a lot of the people there, especially younger people serving and all that, and he got to talk to them. And he found out that they loved Jesus. They did not like the Christian church, and especially they thought Jesus was all pro-abortion and pro-homosexuality, same-sex marriage. And Cleese goes on, I'd like you to comment on this. Life of Brian was never an attack on religion, which is what some people seem to pretend it was. It was an attack on how people hold religious beliefs, an attack on what I would call intolerance and narrow-mindedness, added Cleese. Some of the fundamentalist Christians, and I think he would throw us into there, seem to be performing or practicing a kind of Christianity that I don't think would be recognized by Christ. I don't think Christ said a lot about abortion or even about single-sex marriage. I don't know where all these Christian doctrines came from, but that had nothing to do with what Christ ever said in the Bible. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, there's quite a bit there to respond to. One of the things I think to start with is just to show a little bit of the inconsistency. Again, the narrow-mindedness and the closed-offness, I think you have to turn that back on those who make the same claim, because John Cleese is clearly guilty of the same charge that he levels against Christianity as well. And this isn't a unique thing. This happens quite a bit, I think, in the way of argumentation. The other point is that oftentimes our opinion or our view, and I'm speaking in general of people in society, their view of Jesus often mirrors not so much reality, but what they would like Jesus to be. It's a bit of a wish thinking when it comes to, well, let's see, I think having a God who's important or, you know, friendly and loves everybody, well, that's what Jesus should be. So then they make, it's kind of a reverse thing, they make God in their own image, which is actually something I think Mark Twain once said that, you know, in the beginning God made man in his image, and ever since we've been trying to repay the favor. And we do that in our reflection of what we see of Jesus. But what that does is, that doesn't tell us a whole lot about Jesus. That tells us a whole lot about what's important to the person asking the question.
That's a good point. So we kind of read and write into, especially we're talking about the Bible and Jesus, what we want the Bible and Jesus to look like, and amen, which is what we want him to be and what we want the world and right and wrong to be.
Yeah, it really goes back to the first commandment. We want a God of our own making and of our own choosing. We're the autonomous, subjective source of that, and anything else that, contrary to that or that doesn't fit into that isn't going to work. But see, there's again that irony that of the closed-mindedness of unbelief, really. But speaking positively on the other side of it, you can actually offer some explanations for things like abortion and homosexuality. Just because Jesus doesn't mention the exact word specifically doesn't mean that he never said anything about it. There's a lot of stuff that we're told. You know, John 21 says there were many other things Jesus did in this book that were written in detail, that it would take so many more books to be written if it were possible to do that. But you know, we're not told what all those things were. And so you can't say what they were, but at the same time, you can't say what they're not, too. Arguments from silence don't go very far in either direction. So it's very possible that he did say something about homosexuality that isn't written in the New Testament.
Or, you know, it could be that plus it could also be that Jesus used words which, when we translate them, let's say, into the English, and we'd already talked about this, that the Gospels were recorded in Greek. So when we translate the word into the Greek language and then look it up and see what that word would have been in the Old Testament language.
Yes, quite right.
We find out that Jesus, for instance, did talk about homosexuality is being forbidden,
right,
with a big kind of catch-all sexual immorality word, mm-hmm, that's tied back to Leviticus 18 and 20, which you look at the New Testament, Jesus does affirm all of the Old Testament as without any error and as acceptable word of God. Does he not, Sam?
Absolutely. Even though we don't know what Jesus may have said specifically about specific things that touch on our culture today, we know what he would say if we asked him. He was a God-fearing first-century Jew, and so he would have had a very high opinion, as we see in many occasions in the New Testament. He would have had a very high opinion of the Old Testament.
Sure.
And the Old Testament, above all, of course, that include the things of, you know, sexual behavior and our sexual relationships with other human beings, and then abortion, which falls under both, again, the fifth and the sixth commandments. So,
and I'd like to read here, this is a little excerpt from a great book on the topic. Dr. Robert Gagnon, who's been on this show and on Issues, etc., quite extensively, has a great book on the Bible and homosexual practice. And he writes this: although Jesus does not explicitly refer to same-sex intercourse in extant Jewish tradition, implicit references exist. In Mark 7, 21 through 23, Jesus interprets his saying about what defiles a person as follows: for it is from the human heart that evil intentions come, sexual immoralities, the Greek word there is porneia, adulteries, licentiousness. All these evil things come from within and defile a person. And then Dr. Gagnon writes, no first century Jew, and Jesus is included, and all his hearers, could have spoken of porneia, the plural, without having in mind the list of forbidden sexual offenses in Leviticus chapters 18 and 20, incest, adultery, same-sex intercourse, bestiality. So we're saying here that Jesus did cover same-sex marriage and homosexuality with that one word, which, as Dr. Gagnon correctly writes, all of it would have been understood. And unfortunately, Sam, we're out of time for this show. But will you come on again and we can talk more about these? Because I've got a bunch of new references from our time, including people like Bill O'Reilly of Fox News. And there's a wild book that I haven't read called The Imaginary Jesus. And also a guy named Joseph Garzoni, who wrote a famous best-selling series on Joshua, what Jesus would do and look like if he was here. And I know you got some. So will you come back and talk with us, Sam?
I'd be happy to. Absolutely.
Thanks. And God's blessings to all the good people there, Redeemer Lutheran Church, Huntington Beach, California.
And Christ peace be with all the listeners out there as well.
Amen. Tune in again next week here on Cross Defense Worldwide, KFUO, celebrating our 90th year gospel proclamation.